fire up this broadcast on the video. I'll try that one more time. Hopefully we're going to go on live here in a moment. And there we go. And we're on record. And interesting, I say this every week, but when we go on record on the video, it kicks everybody off and they have to reconnect with us. Thank you for being on the phone. Everybody's slowly coming back online. Let's give them just a moment. For those of you on the telephone, if you have a question or a comment, and tonight you might, please text it to my cell phone, 801-541-9181. That's 801-541-9181. Please just send us a quick text, and I'll do my very best to address it while we're on the call. For those of you who are on the video, and welcome tonight, you can go ahead with your Ustream account. We've got a couple people on that account right now on the chat, just to type in a question, and I'll do my very best to answer it as we go through this process. But welcome tonight. So excited to have you all with us. We're going to talk about a really tough subject tonight, and I'm just going to ask you to be with me, that I can communicate this in a way that will serve you. I may step on a couple of toes, and I may put a little salt in the wound, and it's not intended to cause you unintentional pain, but there may be some things we want to take a look at, because our ultimate objective is to have success in our lives, to have joy in our lives, peace of mind. And sometimes that requires that we actually change. And change can be difficult, particularly when we get to this particular quality. Now, quality one, we talked about connecting with people. Quality two, we talked about mental creation. Quality three, we talked about physical creation. Last week, we started on our power sessions. How did you do with your power sessions? Was it easy for you, or was it as hard for you as it was for me the very first week I tried this? Where we're present three times a day for an hour. Just three times. We support it by reading Scroll 5 and Scroll 9 and Scroll 7, morning, noon, and night. I'll live this day as if it is my last. I will act now, and then to help us get some perspective at the end of the day, I will laugh at the world. And then journaling some of those things that happened. I would just be honored for you to share what happened in your power sessions. Just send me a little note, dave@ogmandino.com. I want to hear from you. What happened when you chose to show up? Oh, wonderful. Hi. We've got some fun guests on tonight. Welcome. Ramona's just telling me who's on the line, and it's great to have you all here. We do this every Tuesday night. This is called a celebration of life, and we take on one of these qualities, and sometimes it takes us a couple of weeks to get through a quality. Tonight we're going to take on the quality of discipline and structure, and we can all do it together. You ready? This is where we give up our resistance and our rebellion and our resentment. And we get down to the work of it. Now, as we discussed in the last couple of weeks, there are two very critical stages of creation. We first create in our mind. We get a clear vision of what it is we want to create in tangible reality. And when we go into this vivid visualization to clearly see what it is we're going to create, physiologically, something happens to us. As I've shared with you before, if we were wired to a functional MRI, parts of our brain would light up that we normally don't use. Now, this happens almost intuitively for intentional creators. They see a vision, it gets them excited, and then they go and work. Passion-driven. The work isn't boring and mundane and repetitious and burdensome. They're not looking at their watch wondering how much longer it's going to be before the day gets over. They're going, oh no, please, don't go so fast. I've got more to get done. Because they're in creation, passion driven. This is one of the great challenges we've had in society in general. When people are attracted to and have a desire for a abundance. They want to create something magnificent with their lives. Because of what we're going to talk about tonight, there is a tendency to go into the future, to time when we're rich, and visualize what it'll be like then. It's called fantasy. And what we do when we're in that space can be so deadly. It's just killing people. Get norepinephrine coursing through our bodies, it feels wonderful, then reality shows up differently, and the body has that autonomic response, a response we cannot control. Cortisol. Our prefrontal cortex shuts down. Our hippocampus, our memory center shuts down. We're rendered emotionally paralyzed. It's a terrible thing to have happen. And when we engage in this escape to a time when we're already there, it's already happened, the work's already done, the reward has already been received, when we do this, we've skipped past all of the work of it. We want to avoid that. And then faced with the work of it, it's boring. It's mundane. It's repetitious. It's burdensome. We don't want to do it. And this is when a very interesting phenomenon occurs. Now, I won't cover every base tonight, but I'm going to do my very best. And some of us have been in a variety of these places. But when we're in this place, we are going to try to find a workaround, a way to get it done without us having to do it. Now, I've got an idea. I've never done this before in a coaching session. But I can tell you that I'm writing a chapter in the book right now. My agent said, go back, rewrite the book as a memoir. Get into the stories of it. Let everyone learn the principles you've learned, David, by living through those experiences, creating a safe place for them to live their own life experiences. And I'm in a chapter right now that I have been stewing over. My sweetheart is sitting right here with me. She just knows this has been so painful, because I'm doing all that I can to communicate one of the most critical elements of creation. I learned it early. In such a way that it'll inspire you to do it instead of discourage you, and discourage you in a way that you might beat yourself up for past performance. This is all about today I begin a new life. Today. Today I shed my old skin. That's so important. It's today. We get to start anew. That's what's so beautiful. So in the spirit of starting anew, I want to tell you a couple of stories, if I may. I remember vividly the eighth grade. And in the eighth grade, there was a bully who kept picking on me. And that bully picked on me until I finally decided the solution to that problem was to join the football team, because he was a football player. And football players don't pick on football players. So in the ninth grade, I went out for football. This was in Alabama. Now in Alabama, junior high, we have lighted stadiums, Letterman's jackets, cheerleaders. The high schools have spring football, just like a college. This is Alabama. This is the depths of the South. Here's the truth of it. I know I played. I have a Woodland Junior High School. All the stuff that came off the jacket is long since gone, but the letter and the Woodland symbol. But I do not remember one single practice or one single game. I have tried so hard, mentally, almost like hypnosis, to go back and experience. The only thing I can surmise is that I was so afraid and so preoccupied with destructive thought processes and cortisol coursing through my body that my memory was shut down. I don't remember. I just remember at the end of the ninth grade, the invitation from the high school to play in the spring football. They would take us over in a bus, and I said, I don't want to do that. My sweet mother and my sister took over my paper route so that I could play spring football. They told us that three of the freshmen would dress in the intramural game. This is a big deal. The whole city came out, the band, the lights. You know, this is going to be a great event at the end of spring football. Three freshmen would dress. And I remember two or three weeks into this practice, and we were running this drill. And in this drill, I was playing a guard. There was a center, two guards, two tackles. In this play, I was to pivot and go down the line and block the defensive end who's coming across unblocked and salivating, going, wow, just his eyes right there on the halfback. And just as he goes to tackle them, boom, the guard just blindsides them. This trap block, that's what they call it, a trap block. Well, that works great in a game. But in this drill that we're running, there's a center, there's a guard, there's a quarterback, a halfback, and the defensive end. I think he knows I'm coming. He knows. We're doing this drill. And I remember, just like it was yesterday, it's so vivid. I can see the grass. I can smell it. I can see the blue sky. I can see the building. I can see the field. We're all dressed in these grungy white uniforms and white helmets. And we had this medical tape across the front with our name on it. And it was soon to be my turn to run this drill. Now, I wasn't very big, but I was slow. And if it takes you a minute to catch that one, it's okay. I wasn't a skilled player. I was lucky to be there. I was playing guard. They called it a quick guard. That made us feel better, I guess. And it was getting to be my turn. And I remember reaching a very specific moment in time. How many years has that been since I was in the ninth grade, actually in the eighth grade, spring of the eighth grade? 14 years old? 43 years ago? 43 years ago. It's like yesterday. And this is what I remember. I remember being so sick and tired of being afraid. I was it. And I made the decision to let it go. And when I did, something came alive inside my soul. It was as if I were 6'5" and 295 pounds. And unstoppable. That inside of me had been waiting. It had been buried in shame and fear, like a big wet blanket over the top of it. And when I took off that wet blanket, it was so grateful to be alive and to breathe. It was like a genie coming alive inside of me. And it was my turn. And I went to the line, and I felt like a monster. I got down on my stance, and the ball was hiked, and I pivoted and went down the line. I hit that guy so hard, it knocked him on his backside. And I've told this story to some of you, and I've also said that he'd been practicing with me. He was not expecting that. But the coach went crazy. Went crazy. Who is that? Grabbed my helmet, looked at my name. Blanchard, do that again. I did it again. And I felt exactly the same way. Pivoted, blocked. Didn't knock him down, but I blocked him. Something inside came alive. A week later, when they announced those three freshmen, all 5'10", 150 pounds, guard. I'm a lineman. I got to play in the intramural game, inter-squad game. I can still remember coming out on the field, like yesterday. I even got to play. I still remember that. It was awkward. It was distracting. It was overwhelming. I came home from that game. Within a couple weeks, my father announced we were moving to Colorado. Well, I came to Colorado. My nickname was Bama. Had a planned chance to play varsity as a sophomore and as a junior. Started at the middle linebacker position. And as a senior, had the privilege of being voted onto the all-conference team. A unanimous vote, I was told by our coach. something that even surprised me. I became absolutely convinced that's not the size. I wasn't very fast. When I started this process, I ran a 5.340, and I was 5'10 and 150. By the time I was a senior, I was 5'11, 175. Ran a 4.740. But that was just gutting. That was running long-distance track, building up endurance, and then doing sprints and speed and just working. What I knew was this. And this is the message for tonight. I was willing, and I so hesitate to tell some of these stories because it's not about me. It's about you reaching inside and finding this same person in you because it's in every one of us. I was willing to work harder than anyone. And you can too. For 3 years of high school, between every, I've never shared this, I don't believe, between every drill, and those of you who played football, you do lots of drills around the field, I was always the first one to the next drill. We ran a 440, I was always the first one done. I worked harder and harder and harder and harder because I didn't have natural ability. Some of you don't either. Now, interestingly, I had an opportunity to either go to the Air Force Academy, their prep program, or go to Ricks College or Brown University. Brown's an Ivy League college. You don't have to be quite as big or fast. Because of some things that happened in high school, I ended up going to Ricks. We were the ICAC champions that year, and I had a new position. It's when Tiny Grant, our 6'5", 350-pound defensive coach, turned to the bench. When we were so far ahead, they couldn't catch up, or so far behind, we couldn't. And he would turn to me and say, or the bench, and say, "Is there anyone that hasn't played?" That was my new position. I was the guy that hadn't played. Tantamount to Rudy, but I didn't stick with it more than that 1 year. Because with a broken knee and a broken ankle and a broken hand and a back that still puts me in the hospital every couple of years, I had reached my limit in that sport. Funniest thing happened, at least I think it is. 10 years later, I went back to Colorado on business, and I stopped by the high school. And met the old coaches, a little fatter, a little balder. But my mentor, Carl Sheely, our defensive coach, a gentleman, played for Purdue, linebacker, was now the principal of Wheat Ridge Junior High School. So I drove over to see him, went in, walked up to the secretary in the office and said, "Hi, I'd like to see Mr. Sheely." And I may ask who's calling. I said, "Dave Blanchard." And she buzzed him on the intercom, and I could hear him go, "Yahoo," in his office. And he came out and gave me a big bear hug, and we went into his office. And when I walked in, he didn't know he was coming. Behind his desk, credenza, wall, and one picture. Carl and me standing on the sidelines, 8x10, newspaper clipping that read, "Arvada West holds opponents to 60 yards per game for the first three games of the season." I sat down. I couldn't take my eyes off the picture. I'm moved by this. Partway into the conversation, he looked over and said, "You probably want to know why that's on my wall." I said, "I do." And he put his arms on the desk and looked me straight in the eye and said, "I keep that picture there to remind me of just how much can be accomplished with little or no talent if someone is willing to give 100%. And there is absolutely no embellishment in that statement. That's verbatim. I wasn't sure exactly how to read that, but I've thought it many times since. You may not in your business, for example, your network marketing, you may not make $100,000 a month. But anybody who works really, really hard could make 10, 120 grand a year. Find another job like that. with your experience and education and background. You really want to play it hard? You want to be the first one to every exercise? You want to be the first one to finish the 440? You want to put that effort in? You want to grind deep and hit hard? You can do 20. It's $250,000 a year. $250,000. You put you in the 1 percentile, 1/10 of 1% of the nation. Huge. Huge. One more story. In between football season, I worked for a man by the name of Terry Byers. He owned Timberline Nursery at the end. It was called Woodrock at the beginning. I was his only employee. He worked for DuPont in the beginning. I was his only employee. And I would show up at 6 o'clock in the morning in the summer, and he would outline what we're going to do. We'd go to the job site. He'd tell me what to do. Then he'd leave and go to work. And then he'd come back at noon, check and see what's happening. Then he'd come back at 5, and then we'd work with pickup truck lights into the evening, sometimes 10, 11 o'clock, and we'd start at 6 the next morning. Did that 6 days a week. I thought that's what we're supposed to do. I had a friend once tell me, you're supposed to get overtime over 8 hours a day or 40 hours a week, and I brought it up with him once, and I said, shouldn't we? And he said, well, I'll tell you what. If you want to work the first half of the day, I'll hire somebody to work the second half of the day. Or you can have both halves. What do you want to do? I told him I'd take both halves the last time we talked about it. I grew up believing that's how you worked. I don't remember a time clock. I just remember we needed to start at 6 because he needed to get to work, and we worked till we were done. That was what needed to be done. Now, I still remember the day that he took me to a job early on. I was just turning 16, and we were going to do a brick and sand patio. I'd never done one before. And I still remember standing there looking at this lady with a cup of coffee in her hands, looking at me, realizing that Terry was about to leave and I was going to be doing this patio. He'd explained it to me. Never done it, but he explained it to me. I remember, in the 9th grade, I gave up fear. No more fear. There was no reason to have fear about it. Fear was not going to get it done well. This was a time for focus on getting the task completed appropriately, putting all of the energy, all of our genius, all of our ability into that moment. That's what we do. Terry said to her, oh, don't worry, ma'am. He's my best man. I was his only man, but I was his best man. By the time that day was over, that woman had a magnificent brick and sand patio. Now, this wasn't about my ability. This is about the topic tonight. It's about letting go of fear and resistance. Because the pain is not in the change and doing what we're going to talk about doing tonight. The pain is in the resistance to doing it. I've said to you many times, the very thing you're looking for is often right behind the very thing we're resisting. And the abundance we receive in our lives is in direct relationship to the speed with which we surrender. That's just the truth of it. However, we're naturally resistant and rebellious, not only to structure, but to authority. 99% of you resist discipline from outside sources. 92% on this phone resist authority. If someone tries to use their position of authority to make you do something you know doesn't make sense, it'll be very hard for you to do it, and you'll probably even say something about it. And if you've had a job, you may have had some challenges with that, and we can all laugh a little bit about it. It's very entrepreneurial. But entrepreneurs learn this lesson. They do not have fear. And two, they are their own boss. I've had many people tell me they want to fire their boss. I say, don't fire them until you're ready to apply for the job. See, we don't get to choose whether we have a boss or not. We just get to choose who the boss is going to be. Somebody on the outside telling us what to do, or is it going to be us driving our own lives? Those are the only two options. So have some fun with me. I feel so passionate about this. I was in a coaching session with a great leader in a network marketing company today, just a wonderful human being. Has built three companies, three organizations with over $250,000 a year of income in all three of them. And as we talked about this very principle today, she said, I'm just amazed. I just assumed everybody knew this. I said, no. The truth is that as a society, not as a whole, but as a society, it's not everybody, but it's getting close. As employees, work just hard enough to not get fired, get paid enough to not quit. Clever aphorism, we've all heard it. But it's very true. We show up, and it's all about the time we show up to the time we quit. We get paid X dollars, and some people even been vocal, so you pay me $7 an hour, I do a $7 an hour job. I think of my oldest son, who's just finishing up his degree at 35, who started at the very lowest levels of Ingenix as a salesperson. Two people, him and a friend. He now is the vice president of the East Coast Division for sales. He handles their largest hospital accounts on the East Coast, Northeast. He just kept doing all that needed to be done. He would show up becoming. He was always learning, reading, studying to be a better one of those. He had a friend, acquaintance, who showed up late, left early, did just enough, and also was very vocal about the fact he wasn't getting a raise, he wasn't being promoted, he deserved more. I think of the time when we came here broke, $1 million in debt on our back, and I decided to become a writer. And I spent 2 years writing, and with a writing partner. Every 6 months, I finished a feature film script. I'm not going to exaggerate this, but I'm going to tell you the truth of it. In the first 6 months, he wrote the opening page and his Academy Award speech. It's true. End of the second 6 months, his Academy Award speech was really polished. At the end of 2 years, he still had not finished the first act of the first script. You want to be a writer? You're right. Ramona's sitting right here with me. She knows I wrote 8 to 10 hours a day and often 6 days a week. That's what you do when you want to become a writer. Whatever business you're in, you want to become the best, you want to have success, you want to have financial freedom in your life, then it's time for us to let go of that desire for ease. No more stress, no more pain, no more debt, no more frustration. Time freedom, financial freedom, as in get to spend whatever I want to whenever I want to. This is the part where I might put a salt in a wound, and please, don't be offended by it. Just know it's been killing you, spending an entire life trying to resist the very things that create success. I'm going to give you a visual tonight. Boy, I've just gone way over the top. I told Ramon I might. Because we've gone so far in the other direction, I'm kind of stretching you out in the other one. It's not to indict anyone. It's just to stretch us so when we get equilibrium, balance, we'll be able to take on our lives. We've just been too far over here. I want you to take a piece of paper, and in the middle of the piece of paper, I want you to make a dot that's about a quarter of an inch in diameter. Everybody got that? Just fill it in. Then I want you to make spokes to a wheel. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 spokes. As if they were spokes coming off of that center. I on one of those spokes, I want you to label it books. Books. Label the next one, DVDs. Everybody got this? Next spoke, CDs. The next spoke, seminars and conventions. Seminars and conventions. The next spoke, training. This is skills-based training. And lastly, coaching, life coaching. All of them hooked to the center. This is what I fear has happened most. We have as a society in our desire to become successful, begin to believe that success comes from reading a book, from listening to a CD, from watching a DVD, from attending a seminar or convention, a training, or this coaching. And that is a lie. All of those are simply there to help us do the thing that's in that middle better. But too many, frustrated, overwhelmed, impatient, wanting it to be easy, have used those as excuses for not doing what's in the middle. Believing that if I go to enough of these, read enough of those, watch enough of that, I will become successful. Somehow by osmosis, the work of it will just get done. And the question is, by whom? God? Do we want him to do the work of it? We read to glean so that we can do the work of it more effectively. We can show up being a better person, more effective, more kind, more considerate, more intrinsically validating. We go to coaching so that we can show up using our vivid visualization constructively, but we will want to actually do the constructive work of mental creation to ignite the passion. We go to the seminar to learn about power sessions so we can actually do them. Not go to a coaching session like last week, say, that's a cool idea. And then the first day we bail out on our power sessions. The focus isn't the power session or the structure behind it. It's being present in the now in passion-driven action. That's the middle. That's the point. That's the reason why we're doing the power session. So we do this more effectively, that piece in the middle. Oh, can you feel this? I'm just aching. I've been aching. Because we keep trying to do everything but that. Dave, I've memorized the scrolls. With all the love in my heart, then start living them. It is time for us to face our fears, our resistance, and our rebellion, and say no more. They are keeping your magnificence and your genius and your ability buried. And we can soothe our conscience, salve our conscience, by reading a good book, or watching a DVD, or listening to that CD, or going to that convention, or coaching, or training. It matters not where we go. It matters what we do with what we got when we were there. That is all that matters. It doesn't matter how busy we are. It doesn't really matter how hard we worked. What results did we get in that middle? For some, it will require harder work. You've got noise in your head that's telling you all kinds of crazy stuff about your ability. You see, when we get into the center of this and we start doing the work of it, that's when we start hearing this noise that's been sabotaging us for a lifetime. we can finally take it on. I would wish one thing for all of you tonight. Frankly, I prayed for it today. That you'd have the moment I had standing on that football field as a 14-year-old kid, sick and tired of being afraid, and saying, no more. I'm going to take the stance. I'm going to pivot and do the block. I'm going to do the work of it. I can tell you the one thing I discovered at that moment that was so amazing is it hurt a whole lot more when I held back. When I went into someone with all that I had, it was thrilling. I fell in love with contact. So, with prayerful pleading, is it your turn? I would just love if you sent me an email tonight. And you said, I made that decision tonight. No more fear. I'm going to stand tall and I'm going to do the work of it. I've been avoiding it. I've been using all of these spokes as excuses and justifications. I'm doing the work of it. I'm here at the seminar. I'm here in the coaching. I'm reading the books. I'm doing the CDs. Yes. This week, stop reading books. Stop listening to CDs. Stop watching DVDs. Stop going to seminars. Not really. But let them be a resource instead of the focus. Because that's what they're supposed to be. So that we can do the work of it. Now, truth of the matter is this. Hope everybody's smiling now. Up in our upper room, the visual is that it's like the attic. And in this place, there are thought processes. If you look at your assessment on the left-hand side, it's the third measurement down, disciplined. Then teachable, which is eight measurements down, seven. Then analytical. These are the three primary culprits. Many of you have one or all three of them out of balance, orange or red, a lot of pressure. This is like a tornado going on inside this attic. Just imagine ourselves climbing up these stairs. And we feel intimidated because there's something going on in there and we're not invited. We haven't been invited. We, the real me, the real you. And we walk up and we come up to that door and we open it and we kind of peek inside. We just see everything swirling around and there's noise going on. And you look in there and when I look in that room, this metaphorical room, I see that treadmill. I see it. I have to catch it every morning and jump on it. It's like a wild bronco. Sometimes when you go to read your scrolls, it's like the book's swirling around. You reach your hand out to grab it. It's almost like you get your hand cut off. Some of you, it's dieting. Some of you, it's the exercise. Some of you, it's the cold calling. Some of you, it's the just connecting with people. This noise is going on. It's swirling and swirling and swirling. And we're afraid to step in the room because if we just step in, we'll get eaten alive by it. Can you feel it? Can you feel this going on inside this attic? And then boldly we open the door and we say, stop it! Stop it! And everything crashes to the floor. We walk in and say, what is going on here? And just for a moment we turn to leave and everything leaps back up. We turn back around. Stop it! It doesn't want to be interrupted. It resists us taking charge of it. This isn't schizophrenia. This is just a systemic thought that is running our life. And many of us have allowed it to do so for decades. And we say, stop it. And for a moment it stops. And then there's a ghost in the back of the room that just kind of slinks up. Who do you think you are, it says. We have been in charge of this room for years. Do you think you can just walk in here and take over? Who do you think you are? And we stand boldly and proclaim, I am the owner of this attic. I have let you run it for a lifetime. And now I am in charge. Can you imagine? What would your life be like if this attic were calm and peaceful, obedient, structured, disciplined, and it followed your command? Remember when we did this, I want to, I get to, I choose to? That statement that Og made in scroll number 9, I hunger for success. Imagine yourself standing at this door. I hunger for success. I thirst for happiness and peace of mind. Lest I act, I will perish in a life of failure, misery, and sleepless nights. Then he delivers my single favorite phrase in all of the scrolls. I will command. I will command. And I will obey my own command. I'm taking charge. I will act now. Success will not wait. If I delay, she'll be betrothed to another and lost to me forever. Now is the time. This is the place. I will act now. Can you feel these things? I want to give you a couple of exercises tonight to start this process of taking back control of this part of our thought processes. Those thought processes that resist structure, that have gotten us in trouble, maybe even fired from a job, made us emotionally unemployable. Stepping back and taking charge, where we can hear a message without summarily dismissing it just because it was presented in a way that we found offensive, or by someone who reminded us maybe of a father figure. Of becoming our own boss, and being able to get up in the morning and actually say, I'm in charge today. I want to, I get to, I choose to. I'm going to read scroll 5 because I want to feed my soul. I'm going to look at my things that I'm going to do today and say, why am I here? That's why I want to be there. And what does this have to do with getting me there? Okay, and of those, which are the three most important? Where if I show up there, I can accomplish more than anything else. One is family, one is business, at least. I then start mentally rehearsing because I choose to use my mind constructively. I'm in charge. I start mentally rehearsing what I can do to make that first power session magnificent. Not a dog and pony show, not a big production, just me showing up in all of my talent, to step into someone's world, to listen differently, connect differently. Time comes and I show up in all of my power. Wet blanket off, genius available, fully maximizing what I've been given, knowing that when I do, I'm going to be given more. Knowing that as I go through this process, people will be put on my path who can serve me and who I can serve. And I read scroll 9 because I want to be alive in the afternoon. I want to be connected. I will act now. My dreams are worthless. My plans are dust. My goals are impossible. All are of no value. That means absolutely of no value at all. Throw the paperwork away. Unless they're followed by action. And then I execute power session 2. Because I want to. Power session 3. Because I'm in charge. Then I read scroll 7 just to have a good laugh. Because sometimes it turns out really weird. I journal what happened. Those miracles that occurred that may not have happened if I weren't that aware. I sleep like a baby. And I get up the next morning. I'm in charge. Is there a chance this swirling wind of thought processes that are resisting structure and discipline, who do not want to be interrupted, who resist being controlled, do you think they might show up occasionally? And the answer is absolutely yes. These will be some of the most difficult thought processes for you to conquer. They will take tenacity, persistence, reading of the scrolls, just as I've described to you. And all of a sudden you start having experiences that make life joyful. And the more joyful, the more complete, the more quiet the noise. And we discover a great secret. When we obey the principles of success, it turns out they weren't restrictive after all. It was just the absolute clear gateway to the very thing we wanted in the first place. We just wanted to get there without having to go through the gate. Nobody gets to. No one. I've shared with you many times, but in this context, when that 10 years was over, 2000, August, and Ramon and I wrote out that last check for $14,000 and put it in the mail, and I collapsed to my knees. I was overwhelmed. 8 years earlier, I'd loaded the gun and wrote the note. Life insurance policy was the only answer for our 7 children. It was dark. It was discouraging. And now it was over. And I knelt down and prayed to my God. And my God asked only one question. What did you learn? And I knew exactly what it was. It's back to this quarter-inch circle right in the middle of your page. I said, you open the doors of opportunity, and I do the work. When I try to open those doors, I frustrate the program. When I try to get you to do the work, I frustrate the program. You open the doors. I do the work. We don't get to avoid it or escape from it. Every successful person has gone through it. However, we get to do it in a way that it's joyful, by being driven by passion, which only occurs when we choose to engage in life, embrace these principles, want to connect and serve other people. So our mind, our mental rehearsal, our exploration, our inspiration, our planning, goal setting, problem solving, all those constructive ways of using our vivid visualization are all directed at engaging and connecting and creating value. We want to create. We don't want to escape. And then we get an inspired idea and impression that ignites our passion. That's what drives the work of it. Absent that, it is too hard. But hard or passion-driven, none of us will escape the work of it if we truly want it. Well, when these thought processes take over, they need to be in control. They also need to be right. I want you to find somebody in your life who has been most adversely impacted when this noise is going on at such a high level and you let it control your attic and you show up needing to be right. Just find out who that person is. You'll know. It could be a spouse or a companion, a child, a coworker, someone in your organization. You'll know who it is. Just identify who it is. Sit down with them. Ask for a meeting. If you want to, make a tent card, you know, like you have a name you'd have on a like a boardroom table, and write out their systems thoughts or systemic thoughts. Put that out there. It might sound like this. Sweetheart, I've been coaching with Dave, and Dave discovered that in my assessment, I have some systemic thoughts. See those over there? And they have to be in control. They need to be right. What's it been like for you all these years, or months, or weeks, when I surrender my will to those thoughts and they take over? What's it like for you when they're running the show and they need to be right? And then we get to just listen. This is a power session, the ultimate power session, and the ultimate intrinsically validating, or intrinsic validating session. We're just going to listen. There's a very good chance they may say something that thought process over there doesn't like. But that's not what I said. That's not what I meant. Bite your tongue. This is your gift to them. Give them the gift. All you get to say is, tell me more about that. Share with me what you're thinking. Is there anything else you'd like to share? And when they're done, thank you. I'll be working on that one. That's it. Now, write down on your paper 24 to 48. By the way, if you're on this group call, you have your Intentional Creation Studio. You will find this in great detail in quality number 4. Click on quality 4. Go to the need to be right, and this exercise will be detailed for you. But 24 to 48, 24 to 48, that's what you want to write on your paper. Just to remind you, those thought processes over there, think obsessively, constantly, obsessively. And when something isn't right, they go on tilt until it's fixed. If your companion or friend or whomever you've chosen says something they don't agree with, they're going to stew and stew and stew and stew and want you to somehow fix this. So the next 24 to 48 hours is going to look something like this. Here I am with my arms wrapped around Ramona, there at the kitchen or wherever, maybe in the bathroom sink in the evening. Oh, sweetheart, I really loved our conversation last night. That was one of the best conversations we've ever had. Thank you so much for sharing. And then this systemic thought that needs to be right, passive-aggressive, is going to start something like, the only thing, can you hear it coming? You said last Thursday that I said this, and I've been feeling really bad since you mentioned it, that you felt so bad about it for all those days. That's really not what I meant. What I meant was, can you hear these thought processes, these insidious thought processes, trying to fix this person? Can we love them enough to let them have their experience and focus on what we can do to show up differently, more open to ideas? That is your mission. That's your assignment this week, is to have that meeting with the person most adversely impacted. Now, I've had a lot of people say to me, well, Dave, I don't need to be right. And they sit down with people, and sure enough, everybody validates they don't, because most of the time, we're pretty scary. When we need to be right, we're scary. And how in the world could they feel safe enough to say the truth? So you want to create a safe place. This is why it's intrinsic validation power session to the max, a safe place where they can verbalize without retaliation. That's why the 2448, without retaliation. That's one. And two, if they say, you really don't, was there ever a time when I did? What was that like for you? Most of you will have a great conversation with someone on this topic. Now, don't take any of it personally, because it's not about you. It's about those thought processes over there that need to be right. This is the beginning of taking control. I step back, and I acknowledge the power they've had in my life, the destructive power. And I take accountability for surrendering my free will to them. And I take responsibility for stopping it in the future. I won't be perfect. I could get a kick in the shin if I said, someday you'll totally be over this. Thank you. I just got my kick in the shin. This is something you'll work on for a long time. These are very powerful thought processes. But focusing on this one piece of letting go of the need to be right can help you quiet this noise. Doing your power sessions will introduce the noise and give you an opportunity to stand at that line, get down in your stance and pivot and block, knowing that when you go full speed in the control of your life, it doesn't hurt as much. I would wish that for all. So in summary tonight, let's let go of fear. I count as one of my single greatest blessings, other than my testimony of my Father in Heaven and the love I have for my sweetheart and for our children. I count as one of the greatest blessings that moment when I let go of fear. I just pray tonight is your night. Second of all, that you have the courage to start taking charge of this part of your life, because it's been the reason why success has eluded you. We've got this quarter inch diameter target. That's where we focus, the doing of it. Everything else around is to help support us. Some of us are just an outright rebellion. We don't even read the books. Some of us use the books as justification for doing, not doing the work. That is the work of it. It's not. The work is right there in that quarter inch. Let us be about doing the work. And as we begin that process, we'll discover whether or not we have a clear enough vision to drive our passion. And that will motivate you even more so to use your mind constructively to get that inspired idea or impression that will ignite your passion. There'll be a dance for a while, doing the work of it and having it hard, getting a clear vision and passion-driven and seeing the joy that comes from doing it and passion-driven. But most important in all that we say tonight, no one who achieves success gets to escape the work of it. No one. We don't get to have God do it for us or someone else. Let us embrace it. Because in closing, some of the greatest moments you'll have in your life will be when you're knee-deep in the work of it. That's when you find out who you really are. You get to meet your genius. You get to have more ability and doubt upon you. You get to have people put on your path who can serve you and who you can serve, and you're in the dance of life in a very sacred and special way. The work of it is actually more joyful than the end. When it's accomplished, we look back, and what we learned and how we grew is what we appreciate the most. But it never happens unless we take the action. So let us focus on being more disciplined and more structured. And let's start by letting go of the need to be right. This week, Scroll 6, I will be the master of my emotions. these thought processes make us wake up in some of the foulest of moods? Hogg says, trees and plants depend on the weather, but yea, I make my own weather. I carry it with me. If I bring rain and gloom and doom and pessimism, my customers will buy not. We want to be the master of our emotions. Hogg tells us in this scroll that as we become the master of our emotions, we change how we think, which changes the chemicals released in our body, which changes how we feel, which changes how we act, which changes our destiny. He told it to us poetically. We now know the science of it. How we feel impacts our actions. Our feelings are driven in most part by our thought processes. Let us take control of that upper room. Oh, this is a wonderful scroll. I will now make allowances for he who meets me with hate today, for he knows not the secret of controlling his mind, which implies I now do. Great secret to be in control of that upper room. My emotions. Well, thanks, everybody. It's been a privilege to be with you. Please forgive me if I have offended you. Offense is not my intention. I have one of the most interesting professions imaginable. I don't get to just throw softballs at people and make them feel good. My mission is to dig down in the trenches with you and give you a hand up, having been in that dark night myself. Sometimes that dark place is really painful, and it's painful for me to go there with you too. But I'm willing to go. Take this hand of Hogg's principles, these six qualities, and let them lift you out of this resistance and rebellion and resentment and get focused on the work of it. Then use all of these other things to support you in becoming the person who can do it better. And you will, as a natural result, have the very things you desire.